Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
32 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nobody's excused from the call of the House today.
Our chaplain today is Pastor Milton S. Hunt. Would the members please arise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Almighty Creator, Heavenly Father, we rejoice in the fresh light of a new and glorious day. When we stand outside in this beautiful arena of our southeast Alaska fjord, we see your signs everywhere. The tall green trees, the Mendenhall Glacier spires, and even the human-manufactured radio tower all seem like thousand fingers directing our attention upwards, beyond the mountains and the clouds, towards you and all your majesty. It often happens when we're inside human-constructed cocoons that we discover ourselves looking down. We watch the stairs as we climb, we read reports as we sit, and we share space and words while we converse with others. Then the temptation comes to forget you, our God and Maker, and imagine we human beings are the only action in town. Forgive us when we begin to follow the crowd and forget to follow you, our coach. O Lord God, direct our eyes up to you and give us wisdom. Grant us also loyalty to high ideals and principles of equality and justice. Keep before us a vision of your truth and your grace. We ask in the name of the teacher of Galilee, Jesus Christ, who came to teach us how to play the game of life. Amen.
Representative Almer, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Martin.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to prayer book spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that we go back up the calendar to excused absences. I've been informed a couple of the members are ill today.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Swackhammer and Representative Cato both be excused from the call of the House. They're ill.
Representative Cato and Representative Swackhammer are ill, thus excused from the call of the House. Would the clerk at this time please certify the legislative journal for the 99th legislative day?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 99th day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Journal for the 99th legislative day as certified be approved.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal before you? Hearing no objections, the journal stands approved. Do we have any guests for introduction? Any guests for introduction today? Messages from the Governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citations, and they are sent to enrolling, honoring foster grandparents, senior companions, and in memoriam, Mary Miller. The Senate has passed House Joint Resolution number 30, urging the League of Women Voters to consider Anchorage as a site of a presidential debate sponsored by the League, and this resolution has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following, and it is transmitted for consideration. Senate Bill 152 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the state's risk management and creating a state insurance catastrophe reserve account and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Is there any other communications that should come before this body?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
The State Affairs Committee has considered Governor Cooper's appointment of Charles Dunnigan to the Alaska Public Offices Commission. The committee recommends that the full body confirm his appointment. The report was signed by Ulmer, Chairman, and concurred in by Boucher, Donnelly, Hoffman, Davidson, Martin, and Ulmer. The Hess Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 20 relating to an interim commission on the status of health care in the health care industry in Alaska, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Ellis. Signing do pass, Kopanen, Ellis, Grunberg, and Donnelly. Having no recommendation, Hudson, Hanley, and Phillips. House Concurrent Resolution number 20 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 27 relating to the United States Army Corps of Engineers permits for dredging or filling wetlands, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 27. Resources, with the same title, recommends it do pass, attaches a zero fiscal note and a zero note with analysis. Report was signed by Cotton, Chairman. Concurring, Cotton, Navar, Pierce, Schultz, Springer, and Herman. Having no recommendation, Hoffman, Sund, and Davidson. House Joint Resolution number 27 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 78, Operation of Farm Equipment on State Highways, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 78, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Cato, Chairman. Concurring, Springer, Pierce, Miller, Hudson, and Cato. House Bill 78 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 91, Chronically Mentally Ill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 91 Hess with a new title, recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Concurring, Porcheau, Brown, Frank, Larson, Boyer, Wallace, and Gall. Having no recommendation, Rieger and Adams. House Bill 91 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 92, Implementing a Settlement Relating to the Federally Created Mental Health Trust, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 92 Finance with a new title, recommends it do pass, and attaches two fiscal notes. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Concurring, Porcheau, Brown, Davis, Boyer, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Larson, Frank, Adams, and Gall. Rieger signed, do not pass. House Bill 92 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 112, Servicing of Certain Residential Housing Mortgage Loans Purchased by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 112 Finance with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Signing do pass, Adams, Porcheau, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, and Boyer. Having no recommendation, Rieger, Frank, Brown, and Davis. House Bill 112 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 166, recommends appropriating from the Earnings Reserve Account of the Alaska Permanent Fund to the General Fund, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 166, State Affairs, with a new title, reports it back as follows. Report was signed by Ulmer, Chairman. Signing do pass, Boucher and Ulmer. Signing do not pass, Donnelly. Having no recommendation, Martin and Davidson. House Bill 166 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 207, relating to capital gains on sales of investments from the Alaska Permanent Fund, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 207, State Affairs, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund, Chairman. Signing do pass, Sund, Omer, Taylor, and Navarre. Having no recommendation, Grunberg, Barnes, and Cotton. House Bill 207 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 273, relating to financial institutions, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund, Chairman. Concurring, Sund, Ulmer, Taylor, Barnes, Grunberg, and Navarre. House Bill 273 appears on today's calendar. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 279, issuance or relocation of a club license for the sale of alcoholic beverages, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Springer, Chairman. Concurring, Cato, Sawacki, Herman, and Springer. House Bill 279 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Jack Runzer, a wrestler from Palmer High School, by Representative Menard. Citation honoring Valdez Buccaneers Wrestling Team, 1987 Alaska State AAA Wrestling Champions, by Representative Cato.
Those bills will be referred to rules for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This then brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first, Mr. Majority Leader?
Can we please have an at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at-ease, we're about to enter into the daily calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are a couple of amendments that have been distributed on House Bill 143. I would move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 143 appear at the bottom of the calendar today, and that, I think, will expedite the rest of this.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, House Bill 143 is moved to the bottom of the calendar. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 231 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the Eagle River Greenbelt Land Exchange and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Cotton, Chairman. Signing do pass, Springer, Pierce, Davidson, and Cotton. Hoffman has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Concurring, Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Rieger, Frank, Davis, and Brown. Mr. Speaker, there is a technical correction on House Bill 231. On page 1, line 27, after the description, the words southeast one quarter should have been added before the new material. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
That will be treated as a clerical error in the land description. Having one, Mr. Majority Leader.
Just a point of information. I believe for the member's information that the that there should be that the words SE one quarter should appear prior to the semicolon on line 27, just before the language that's underlined, so people know where it is.
Okay, we have no amendments or committee substitutes. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 231 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
House Bill Number 231 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the Eagle River Greenbelt Land Exchange and providing for an effective date.
Third reading under debate. Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill is pretty self-explanatory. It approves and ratifies the Eagle River Greenbelt Land Exchange. Additionally, it adds the Thunderbird Falls parking lot to the Chugach State Park. The exchange would add 3,558 acres along Eagle River to public ownership, and there's also an option for a couple of other parcels along the river involved in the exchange. In return, Eklutne Incorporated, the Native Village Corporation in my district, receives two blocks downtown between A and Cordova Street and 5th and 6th Avenues. It's about 2.5 acres, and this was the land that had been cleared and set aside for the, at one point, a proposed state office building, and it's my understanding that the administration nor anyone else at the moment has any plans for a state office building in Anchorage. The value of the property downtown, the appraisal showed $8.6 million, and the value of the Eagle River Greenbelt area described is in the agreement is worth $8.73 million. So the additional $173 million is available through an appropriation that the legislature made last year. Obviously, I think it's in the best interest of the state to acquire this valuable recreation land that's close to downtown Anchorage, and it's also important that to point out that the land that Eklutne Incorporated will receive will now appear on the tax rolls as privately owned property and with potential for development.
Any further debate? Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, personal point here. I own some property near the downtown site, and I believe I have a conflict of interest and request to be excused from voting on this particular bill.
Hearing objection, the Majority Leader must vote. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have any interest in this property. However, I am concerned with this possible transfer. Mr. Speaker, if I may be given a little bit of latitude to frame the issue. The issue, Mr. Speaker, is several years ago, downtown business persons were convinced that the state of Alaska would build a new state office building. And through various techniques, they gave up that property for that development. My understanding at that time, we paid some $6.5 million. Mr. Speaker, it appears today what we're proposing to do is to basically give away some very, very valuable downtown property for property that is generally considered wetland. It is below 500 feet elevation and is not capable of very much other development. We're prepared today to transfer land, wetland that is, valued between $2 and $6, depending upon which appraisal you look at, versus very, very valuable land valued somewhere in the neighborhood of $45 per acre. The speaker from Eagle River speaks of the best interest, that $45 per square foot. Thank you, gentleman from Fairbanks, who brings this to my attention. The speaker from Eagle River speaks of the best interest of this property. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm of the opinion that the best interest is to retain the property under the control of the state, and if need be, let's transfer it back to the private sector, if no more than give those persons who originally sold the property to the state at least a first right of refusal. There's nothing in the documents that I have read so far states that that has taken place. But, Mr. Speaker, I think there is a more important issue to be discussed here. This legislative body has considered the mental health land question. I'm in possession of a letter from a Mr. Gottstein, and if I may just quote just briefly from this. It appears, Mr. Speaker, that the Alaska Mental Health Association and others in the Mental Health Trust Lands litigation has tentatively asked that this land be held because it is ideal for the kinds of lands that the mental health trust persons have been looking for. This is property that can be turned into a high income. It can certainly accrue considerable dollars towards the meeting of our obligation under the mental health trust proposal that we have been looking at. In closing, Mr. Speaker, let me share with this body. I think this is a raw deal. We're trading valuable downtown property for wetland. And for what? To preserve it as a park? Anchorage is a new, young city, Mr. Speaker. And I'm just fearful here that by taking out two critical blocks in downtown Anchorage and trading that away for wetland is not the best interest of the city of Anchorage, the people of Anchorage, and the state in general, particularly when we look at the potential tax income that could be generated from this property.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I certainly don't blame the previous speaker for being suspicious of land trades. I know that I don't think I've ever voted for one before, and I'm not sure I'll ever vote for one again, but I think this is a pretty straightforward, easy to understand, simple trade that this is the first time I've heard of any objection to it. For instance, no one has ever come forward and suggested that there were other parties interested in those downtown lots. That's the first I've heard of that, and it's a new issue that I'm not sure that it's been raised any other place. As far as the mental health lands question is concerned, I don't believe there's a strong continuing interest in the question that was raised. There are no mental health lands involved in either the Eagle River lands or neither are the downtown lots mental health lands. They are state lands that could have been used to settle the dispute with the people that are advocating a settlement of the mental health lands dispute. It appears that there is another more favorable, better settlement on the horizon, thanks primarily to the efforts of Representative Porchot. Finally, as far as whether it's in the best interest of the municipality of Anchorage, they are very much in support of this exchange. The assembly has approved it. In fact, I believe the way it works is that the municipality could pick up the downtown lots if Eklutna doesn't get them. But the city of Anchorage wants this to happen. They're very much in favor, again, of the acquisition of those privately owned lands along Eagle River. There's 3,558 privately owned acres. And admittedly, some of them are wetlands, and they've been appraised accordingly. Some of them are developable lands, though. The firm of Blacksmith and Richards did the appraisal, and they apparently have passed all the tests for they meet all the requirements for making a correct appraisal. So I don't think there should be any question about the appraised value of the property. Again, that's another point that has never been that has never surfaced in the hearings that have taken place on this legislation. But finally, I don't blame people for being suspicious about land trades. I know I've been in that position myself. It so happens in this particular case, I feel very comfortable.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I also rise in support of this legislation for the Eagle River Greenbelt. I do believe it is in the best interest of Anchorage. Eagle River is practically the only place in the municipality of Anchorage for a playground and for the residents of Anchorage. As you may know, we have an Eagle River's visitor center, plus the Eagle River campground, plus a couple of access points into the park itself. And we do have a lot of people coming in from Anchorage to our neck of the woods utilizing Eagle River for recreational purposes, whether it's ATV, snow machines, fishing, kayaking, boating, swimming, whatever, or even wildlife viewing. So I do believe that this exchange for the two downtown lots for this 3,600 acres is in the best interest of all 238,000 people that reside within the municipality of Anchorage. Also might add that this would also help diversify the economy in Anchorage, because our area, Eagle River Chugiak, is interested in building up a good tourism program, and this would be another added attraction to draw tourists from the lower 48, Canada, and Europe and around the world. So in times of economic distress that we're feeling right now, I think this is one more step in helping the, bring in money in the state.
Any further debate? Representative Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to inquire as to how the state acquired these downtown lots, and if it paid money for them, wouldn't it be possible to just sell them to raise some money, which I understand we could use?
Representative Cott.
The answer to the question is yes. The state owns the land in question, and fee simple. It's been appraised at $8.6 million, so presumably the state could sell the property, and yes, it is a valuable asset.
Any further discussion? Representative Taylor.
Yes, I just had one question. In this land exchange, are there any other privately owned lands that are being exchanged? In other words, is it just a Kloutna, or are there some other private parties in there too? And if so, are they going along with this land exchange, or are we using operation of law to take those lands?
Okay. Representative Cott.
Strictly Kloutna land and state land. There are some other private parcels nearby Eagle River that many of us have an interest in acquiring, but they are not dealt with in this legislation.
Senator Furness.
Mr. Speaker, the member from Eagle River indicated his surprise at the objections to this switch. Let me share with the body a letter, again, if I may take a few liberties here, from Mr. Jim Gottstein. So I'm quite surprised and dismayed that our long-stated objection to the proposed exchange, communicated a number of times to Mr. Gary Gustafson, Chief of Land Management Division of Land and Water Management, has not been forwarded to the appropriate person. He goes on to say, as you know, the amount of available state land suitable for inclusion in the trust, talking about Mental Health Trust, is very limited. For the state to continue to dispose of suitable replacement land in general, and these specific parcels in particular, seriously hampers efforts to reconstitute the Mental Health Land Trust as ordered by the Alaska Supreme Court in the State versus Weiss. Let me also share, Mr. Speaker, the Commissioner of Labor had also commented on this. He says, while I have no objection to the proposed Eagle River Lands Exchange, I would mention that it has not been established that there are substantial benefits to the state. He goes on to say, also it is suggested that a Kloutna Inc. would develop the Anchorage parcel of land to the economic benefit of Anchorage, yet no mention is made of the intended use by a Kloutna. Those are serious concerns, ladies and gentlemen. I think we should defeat this legislation today.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to briefly speak to the issue of mental health lands. I think, as the representative from Eagle River had mentioned, there are no mental health lands on in either the downtown location or in the Eagle River location. However, it is true that any commitment of state land right now conceivably removes from the total amount of state lands that might be available to satisfy some of the provisions under the Weiss decision. However, We reported out yesterday HB 92 from the Finance Committee, which would obviate all of these problems and head off any such problems in the future through the settlement that is being proposed under that legislation. Hopefully that legislation will reach the House floor shortly and will remove any such problems in the future. However, even with this, the amount of land involved relative to the size of the problem that we're facing with the mental health land reconstitution issue is really quite small and really, I don't think, has a real bearing in this issue.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since the land in question is valued at $8.7 million and the lands presently are subject to 7I by SERI, and it's my understanding that there's a non-development clause in the agreement, and as a potential recipient of 7I funds, I declare a conflict of interest and request the body not to vote on this piece of legislation.
Object. Hearing objections, the representative must vote. Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a representative of downtown Anchorage, I'm a strong supporter of this legislation, and I too am concerned, like the representative from East Anchorage, that these lands, the two parcels in the downtown area, the two blocks, go back into private hands and go back onto the tax rolls. I received a number of complaints while I've been a representative and when I worked in this body as a staffer from downtown businesses, specifically the Downtown Business Association, as well as homeowners in the area, because the land in its undeveloped state, while we were fighting over whether there would be a state office complex on those two parcels, that area undeveloped was unsightly. It continues to be to this day. It's unsafe for children in the area. The dust that blows around dirties up the streets and is a constant nuisance to downtown shoppers and to downtown businesses. And I do want to see that area developed privately in relation to the other attractions that are in the downtown area. East downtown Anchorage is a part of town that's remained relatively undeveloped, and that there's a great deal of opportunity there for private developers. And I'd like to see that happen. So I'm a supporter of this legislation.
Representative Ulmer.
Could we have a brief at ease, please?
Would the House will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have House Bill 231 before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just had one last question. I guess I'd like to be assured that this land will, in fact, be on the tax rolls. The land in downtown Anchorage will be on the tax rolls and would not be exempted from taxation under any pending federal legislation or under existing law.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, that question came up many times during the hearing. And in fact, on the April 9th hearing in the House Resources, Representative Sund asked that the land going into Clutinous hands in downtown Anchorage is going immediately on the tax rolls. Chip Dennerline for the municipality of Anchorage responded in the affirmative.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure that there's someone more knowledgeable than I on the subject on this floor, but I do believe that undeveloped land, as it now is, belonging to one of the regional corporations, does not go on the tax roll. Perhaps someone can correct my impression of that. And I also believe that under the 1991 amendments that are pending, even the developed lands could be transferred to other entities and not be taxed.
Representative Cotton.
This would be, again, this would end up on the tax rolls. The Angska lands that were conveyed to the Native corporations through the Claims Act fall into a different category. This land would be acquired by a village corporation, not a regional corporation, under a different process. And the Angska lands could be affected by 1991. In some cases, aren't taxable. This land is not in that category. This land is taxable and will immediately go on the Anchorage tax rolls.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, I only had one final question, and that was, it hasn't been addressed yet except to be very casually addressed, and that is, it appears as though there's about an $800,000 difference between these two exchanges
out of that $800,000, is one party then going to be paying over time or in cash or something $800,000 to the other party? I think this is land the state purchased, if I remember correctly, to build that building on, and we decided not to build the state office building, and I think it was $6.5 million or something we paid for it, and now we're going to sell it, in essence, by taking land in exchange. And if there is that difference, I'd just like to know how the difference is being paid for.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, the downtown lots are assessed at, or appraised, I should say, at $8.6 million. The 3,558 acres in Eagle River are appraised at $8.73 million for a $173,000 difference. Through the use of last year's appropriation that this body approved, that $173,000 is currently available. And that's where the money's going to come from to make up the difference.
Any further debate? Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to declare a possible conflict of interest as a partner in land holdings that are adjacent to the Eagle River Greenbelt and ask permission to abstain from voting.
We hear objections. Representative must vote. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, just to be on the safe side, I'm going to ask for the same motion as the representative before me. I don't think I have a conflict, but at least I want to get rid of the appearance simply because my house is pretty close to the Greenbelt. So I move that I refrain from voting on this issue.
Hearing objections. The body appreciates those people that feel that have a conflict of interest to declare that. Any further debate? Ready for the question. The question is, shall House Bill 231 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Mr. Majority Leader. Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
34 yeas, 3 nays.
House Bill 231 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on House Bill 231 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Furness.
Speaker, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on the bill just passed, with House Bill 231.
Notice of reconsideration has been given. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 273 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to financial institutions and providing for an effective date. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 273 Judiciary with the same title, and do pass. The report was signed by Sund Chairman, concurring Sund, Omer, Taylor, Barnes, Grunberg, and Navarre. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 273 be adopted by the body.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the CS Judiciary? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do object for information purposes mostly. I wish my bill would pass through the committee process this quick. This was introduced on the 15th of the month by the governor, and it's the 28th, so 13 ain't too bad, 13 days. The major concern is a simple repealer on page 3, line 13, section 4. And specifically in law, if I may, Mr. Speaker, read that, because I know the members don't have it before them. It says that if the department decides to liquidate a bank, it shall give notice to the directors, stockholders, and so on, 15 days notice and so on. And I'm wondering why that should be repealed. It seems to me that it's just normalcy, or it should be, if you're going to liquidate a bank, to let them know.
Representative Sund, would the House please stand back to order? Before the at ease, the motion before us was the adoption of the committee substitute judiciary. Representative Sund.
So I'm just going to answer the question of the member from Anchorage that the purpose of this bill here is to give our banking director and the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the ability to manage and solve some of the problems that we may be entering into this state. We all know we have a problem going on with a downfall in our economy and that, and it's affected all the institutions. And this is to give some flexibility in the banking world to help them resolve some of the issues that may come up in the bank area and get on with that program. I will note in Section 1, we have also changed in a judiciary CS the priority of claims in any liquidation to help the depositors to protect their priority. And it's basically a consumer-oriented type bill to help get on with any reorganization that may need to take place in the banking industry.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to add one other side note on the indirect answer to the question asked by the representative next to me. Why eliminate that 15 days notification? I don't know how many members of the body may have seen the problems that were portrayed on a recent 60 Minutes with the banking industry across the country, and that is that not only are some banks failing because of some bad loans they've made, but there are other banks that are out there failing because of fraudulent and complete mismanagement by their officers. And Queen City Bank in Seattle was one that was focused on, and that's impacted even some members of this state. So as a consequence, can you imagine what we'd be into if, in fact, we had to notify people we were going to take over the bank 15 days in advance and have those officers have the opportunity to play games with that money for another 15 days? It's an anachronism. It's unique to Alaska. We're not even quite sure how it ended up in there. But once the state opts to move forward to step in and take over, or the authorities move forward to step in and take over a bank, they need to be able to do that immediately, say on a Friday, so that bank can be back open again on Monday so that the consumers can be taken care of. And one other item in here that I think is important for discussion is the $1,000 limitation. I think that's very important because it no longer will limit a depositor to the $1,000 limit. Instead, whatever amount is in there, they'll be sharing pro rata on that basis. Right now, because of FDIC, you have to understand that all these banks are insured up to $100,000. So if the bank failed, you would receive your $100,000 if you had that much in there. If you had $120,000 in there under our law, you'd only receive $101,000. As a consequence of this amendment, which I think is a very good one, if you had your $120,000 in there, you'd get $100,000 from the insurance and $20,000 would come out of the pro rata share. And as a consequence, the chance of actually making our people whole that are depositors would be much better. So I strongly support this legislation. It has moved very fast. There hasn't been probably a long enough period of time for everyone to become aware of it as much as they'd like to, but I think it is good legislation.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the CS judiciary? The objections not being maintained, the committee's substitute judiciary has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
I have none.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 273 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to financial institutions and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to address a question to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He indicated this bill give at least the controlling authorities a means of better controlling particularly troubled institutions. I would ask the chairman to point out those sections of the bill that would address those concerns and give those abilities.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, the prior speaker from Wrangell addressed a lot of that. It gives the bank director and the FDIC a lot more flexibility in fashioning a solution to any bank that may become in financial trouble, and that they have the ability to operate very quickly. I would note that we are the only state in the nation that has a section such as 470E.
Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that answer really doesn't satisfy me. It appears here that Section 1 of the bill, maybe I haven't had a chance to look at the existing statute, but it says here it is amended to read. Looks like what we've done, we've given some priorities in liquidation, First priority is an obligation incurred by the department. I would assume that's the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, Division of Banking. We give some priorities to the wage and salaries of officers and employees earned during the three-month period, not to exceed $3,000 for each person. And we also gave a priority to fees and assessment due to the department. So at least like it appears that the department is doing fairly well on at least two accounts so far. We've taken away the $1,000 per each deposit, and I would assume if the FDIC is taking it over, that deposits are guaranteed up to $100,000 per depositor. But at least this document does not say that specifically. Short of that, Mr. Speaker, it appears that we are protecting some people, but it doesn't appear we're giving the protection to the consumer. It seems here that we are at least tightening up the naming of an institution and perhaps preventing any infringements. Other than that, Mr. Speaker, I don't see any need for this legislation.
Representative Sund.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, an answer on the priority in liquidation is the existing statute. The removal of the limit to $1,000 would impact that over $100,000. FDIC guarantees the first $100,000. This would remove any limit on any deposits over the $100,000. They would be prorated on each depositor.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
34 yeas, 2 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the final passage of the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 273 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Sund?
Reverend at ease.
Will the House please stand at ease? Representative Sund?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to announce my reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 273.
Notice of reconsideration has been given. Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask the permission of the body to bring up my notice of reconsideration at this time.
Okay. Are there any objections? Are there any objections? Hearing none, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to financial institutions and providing for an effective date.
The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Ready for the question. The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
29 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Judiciary, has passed the House on reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move consent that the roll call on final passage of House Bill 273, Judiciary, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Getting close to the bottom of the calendar, we have some citations for approval.
Excuse me.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. We have a House concurrent resolution. Would the clerk please read that?
House concurrent resolution 21 by Porchot, Adams, Barnes, Boucher, Boyer, Brown, Cato, Collins, Cotton, Davidson, Davis, Donnelly, Ellis, Frank, Furness, Grunberg, Gall, Grusendorf, Hanley, Hoffman, Hudson, Kopanen, Larson, Martin, Menard, Miller, Navarre, Pierce, Pettijohn, Phillips, Rieger, Schultz, Springer, Sun, Swackhammer, Taylor, Ulmer, and Zawacki, relating to use of Alaska products and services. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Concurring, Donnelly, Ellis, Davidson, Menard, and Kopanen. Furness has no recommendation. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Second and final reading. Any debate? Ready for the question. Question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 21 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
36 yeas, no nays.
House Concurrent Resolution 21 has passed the House. Now getting closer to the bottom of the calendar, we have some citations. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have several citations on the calendar today, honoring Miles Brown, National Merit Scholar, honoring Hazel Rantala Johnson, Community Leader, in memoriam Mildred Parsons, and in memoriam James Leroy Bonsteel. I move and ask unanimous consent that the body approve the four citations.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the citations on today's calendar have been adopted. We are now at the bottom of the calendar. Will the clerk please read the title of the next bill?
House Bill 143, by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the assessment of civil penalties under the Alaska Securities Act and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Donnelly, Ellis, Davidson, and Boucher, having no recommendation, Menard and Furness. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sun Chairman, concurring Navarre, Barnes, Taylor, Grunberg, and Sund. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Davis, Brown, Frank, Boyer, Swackhammer, Gall, Furness, no, Gall, excuse me, Larson, Adams, and Porchot. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill number 143.
Are there any objection to the adoption of the CS Labor and Commerce? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute Labor and Commerce has been adopted. The clerk, please make reference to amendment number one.
Amendment number one by Pettijohn, and it starts with page 3, line 5, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, before moving the amendment, I would like to inquire of either the Majority Leader or the Labor and Commerce Chairman, what is the current standard of proof which is required at a hearing that is the subject of the section that I'm possibly amending. Under 4555-225, which I do not believe is not amended by this bill, it allows the administrator to adopt regulations concerning these hearings. And I would like to know what those regulations are with respect to the standard of proof which is required to uphold an order under these provisions.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This, our Securities Act, which is AS 55, it's entitled the Alaska Securities Act of 1959. It's taken from the Uniform Securities Act of 1952. The standard is the same standard as in any other civil action, and that is by a preponderance of the evidence.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number one.
Okay, amendment number one has been moved.
Mr. Speaker, the hearings which this amendment would cover occur after an order has been issued. A temporary order has been issued for a violation of the Securities Act. Now, as the majority leader stated, apparently at this time, the standard of proof required is simply a preponderance of evidence, which means simply that if there is any amount of evidence in excess of 50% in favor of the action of the administrator, then it's upheld. And that is the standard used in civil litigation. However, these hearings are, as I understand them, done on fairly short notice. They're extraordinary in the sense that in a standard civil proceeding, you have the right of discovery, you have the right of subpoenaing witnesses on your behalf, you have a whole panoply of rights guaranteeing that at the trial that takes place, both sides are going to be adequately heard, adequately prepared, and the trier of fact is going to have all the evidence before him that's appropriate. These hearings take place under very short time frames, and to me, an additional standard should be required, because the sorts of orders that can be issued by the administrator are extremely broad, and under the current language, all that's necessary is if it appears to the administrator that somebody's doing something wrong, he can issue an order. Now, there's no standard there at all. I mean, it's just totally subjective. It may be completely unsupported by evidence. It may be completely wrong-headed. However, if the administrator feels that way, that's okay. Well, if we're going to allow that kind of discretion, I think we need to require that administrator, in order to have that order upheld, or to issue one if the temporary one hadn't been issued previously, to come in and make a pretty good case. He should show by clear and convincing evidence, which is a standard which is commonly used in various proceedings, and there's a great deal of legal precedent on. He should be able to come in there and make his case. If he can't establish it by clear and convincing evidence, maybe he should have to go through the regular civil litigation process and allow the party who the order is against an opportunity to develop his case. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, as the governor's transmittal letter, which is attached to the members' packets and is found in the February 20 journal at page 279, states, we have here basically what was the Uniform Securities Act. The original amendment to this bill proposed in House Bill 143 is simply to bring the Alaska Securities Act into conformity with the revised Uniform Securities Act promulgated in 1985 by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, the same body that promulgated the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, Uniform Commercial Code, and the various other bills that we passed. There is a well-established body of law in this area that has national application, and the body of law establishes a preponderance of the evidence standard. And there's a reason for that, Mr. Speaker, because these are civil cases. They are not simply fraud cases. They are not simply civil penalties or criminal penalty type cases. They go everything from denials of registration on down, and they run the gamut. There is a well-defined body of case law defining and interpreting this standard under the Act. If we adopt Amendment Number 1, I believe we will be out of conformity with the Uniform Act, and that's a very dangerous precedent when we have, for a number of years, had a Uniform Act essentially in the state, and people have been operating under it. The department has, the governor has at the department's request, put this bill in on the civil penalties. The department has informed me that if this amendment passes, they will oppose the bill. It does that much injustice and that much harm to the present securities law in this state.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I have a question then on this preponderance of the evidence standard and the well-defined body of law that surrounds it. If you have a, is it a different preponderance of the evidence to on a fine which is not more than $25,000? Let's say that you have, as the administrator, the discretion of fining someone $500 or $25,000, which is how I read that. It's anything less than. Is it a different preponderance of evidence to fine them $500 than it is for $25,000? Or is it once you have the preponderance, you can, with your total discretion of the administrator, fine any amount you want within that limit? I'm trying to see where the check and balance is on what the size of the fine is.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would refer the members to the sections that the member from District 8 who just spoke was referring to. Page 2, lines, the section beginning at line 15 and the section beginning at line 21. Subsection B, beginning at line 15, allows the administrator to impose a civil penalty of not more than $2,500 for a single violation or not more than $25,000 for multiple violations for persons who knowingly or intentionally violate the chapter or regulation. Subsection C is for other violations that are not necessarily knowing or intentional, may be reckless, may be criminally negligent or negligent. The standard for that is that the administrative agency, the Division of Banking, acts in a quasi-judicial capacity, acts as an administrative tribunal, and must conform to the normal findings of fact and this sort of a thing. They make a specific factual finding as to whether the accused has knowingly violated the act or has recklessly violated the act. And that is the standard that's applied. It's the same kind of a standard, for example, that the Department of Labor and other bodies do for, like, a violation of OSHA, a violation of some of the workplace safety laws. These are commonly done. They generally have hearing officers who are appointed and are administrative judges in this area, and it's a well-defined practice of law.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Well, Mr. Speaker, with regard to the uniformity that exists under current law, I would beg to differ with the majority leader, since the Uniform Act presumably would include 4555-225, and that says that each individual state can adopt regulations, and that's what I'm questioning, is the regulations that are adopted there, because to me, if the Uniform Act calls for each state to adopt its own regulations, there's certainly going to be a disparity and a diversity among the 50 states and the regulations they adopt. But, Mr. Speaker, I think the analogy here is to, these hearings are analogous to me to a temporary restraining order, a preliminary injunction that you get in a civil litigation, and you've got to go through a lot more hoops to get one of those in regular civil litigation, because it's an extraordinary remedy. To me, the remedies being sought by the administrator are extraordinary in the same sense, and we should require a greater standard. Thank you.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To respond to both of those, under generally accepted principles of administrative law, an agency may not act beyond the scope of its statutory authority. The only regulations in its quasi-legislative function it may adopt are those that are within the scope of the statutes. And just as there is uniformity in the statutes in this area themselves, the regulations must have that same degree of uniformity to conform with the Uniform Act. So there is not a disparity of regulations. With respect to the argument that this is like an injunction, I agree. And the standard under Civil Rule 65 for injunctions, even temporary restraining orders, which are issued ex parte without the other party being there, is a preponderance of the evidence. And that's the same standard that's here.
Any further debate on amendment number 1? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
15 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed adoption. Would the clerk please make reference to Amendment number 2?
Amendment number 2 by Pettijohn to page 1, line 19, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Pettijohn? Hear objections. Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, under the current law, the administrator has essentially no standard that he is required to adhere to when he decides to issue an order. It is whatever appears to him. It's a totally subjective standard, and a person who could be damaged by orders that are issued in bad faith, or orders which are issued without any evidence of a substantial nature, just a hunch or a suspicion, or I kind of figure they're doing something wrong here, so therefore I'm going to issue an order, I'm going to shut them down. Well, I don't think that's appropriate. If we're going to have orders issued, and some of these orders can be issued without having a hearing held before they're even issued, I think we need to have this administrator have something more than a hunch than he's working on. And I think probable cause is a good standard. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Once again, this language is in the present statute. It is not a change in the bill. It has been in the Alaska Securities Act since 1959. It was taken from the Uniform Securities Act. There is a well-defined body of law, both under this act and under general administrative law, defining what they're talking about in language when it appears to the administrator. It's not as high a standard as probable cause. Probable cause appears in the criminal law. It's the standard that's used to indict or to bind somebody over after a preliminary hearing. It is not used in the civil law generally. And this is typical language that is found in administrative law. Again, the Division of Banking opposes this and believes that this will do such substantial violence to the Act that they would not support the bill if this amendment is adopted.
Representative Pettijohn.
Well, Mr. Speaker, maybe the Majority Leader can describe to me this well-established body of law that defines what an appearance is. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be happy to do that. There are a lot of cases in the annotation on this. This deals with the substantial evidence standard. If there's substantial evidence to support the administrator's decision, the decision is generally upheld on appeal, and that's the standard that the reviewing court uses, and that's the standard of the administrator.
Any further debate on amendment number 2? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
15 yeas, 23 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill number 143 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to the Alaska Securities Act and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
33 yeas, 5 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the final passage of Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill number 143 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. That brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before this body? Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to waive a bill from Judiciary Committee. It's House Bill 230. Get the correct title here. An act relating to an insurance premium tax that the act effectively raises the premium tax from 2.7 to 3%. The next committee referral is finance.
Are there any objections to the motion to waive House Bill 230? Hearing no objection, the bill goes to the next committee of referral. Unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Could we please have a very brief at ease?
The House, please. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we're under unfinished business. Is there any further unfinished business to come before this body? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we revert up to the introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objection? Hearing no objection, proceed, Representative.
Yes, in Gallery B, I have a guest today from Kodiak. He is the director of the Fisheries Industry Technology Center and is doing a fine job of getting new products on the market for our fisheries of Alaska, Dr. Zhang Li.
I was going to ask if there are any further guests for introduction, but that's about it. In the gallery, back to unfinished business. Announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Kopanen.
Today's Hess committee meeting will be held at 3 p.m. in the Hess room. We'll be considering a committee substitute for Senate Bill number 1, Rights of Blind and Disabled, committee substitute Senate Bill number 78, Handicapped Parking, a committee substitute for House Bill 260, which is titled Smokeless Tobacco, it concerns the taxation of snus, and House Bill 189, Divorce and Dissolution.
Representative Boucher, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Special Committee on Telecommunication meeting today is canceled.
Representative Springer.
Representative Cato announces that the House Transportation Committee scheduled for tomorrow, 1:30, is canceled.
Okay. Any further committee announcements? Representative Pourchaud.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow, Wednesday, at 4 p.m. in House Finance Committee meeting, we will be discussing the student loan bonding proposition, HB 39. We will have available, hopefully by tomorrow morning, some draft of a new student loan bill that incorporates many of the suggestions that have been the topic of other pieces of legislation. And at the 4 p.m. meeting tomorrow, we will have representatives from post-secondary and other people there to answer questions on some of the significant changes being proposed in the student loan program.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The members should retain their packets on House Bill 231, Eagle River Greenbelt. That has been asked for reconsideration.
Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All members of the body are invited to join the Children's Caucus today at noon in the Butchervich Room.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Just to remind the minority members, there will be a minority caucus at 4:30 in my office.
Okay. Special orders. Any special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the body stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Thank you.